a radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant.
That's a G,
yo. And George.
Thanks, Joe.
Okay. Yeah.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Come on, George, on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. So this offseason, the Indianapolis Colts, they didn't do much. They mostly just brought back two key pieces. They brought back Michael Pittman. They gave him a contract extension. They just, you know, extended DeForest Buckner, who just a couple years ago they traded for. They traded a first-round pick for him. So they obviously have, you know, invested in their own guys. But it's just a very different approach than what we saw the Houston Texans take. And they have a quarterback like you on a rookie contract. Now, their salary cap situation was a little bit different, but they still had, they had plenty of money to spend. They just chose not to. Now, for me, the big difference between the Colts offseason and the Texans offseason is that the Colts tried to be the Texans, and I think they mostly just failed.
What do you mean by that?
Danielle Hunter, it's been well reported that he was down between the Indianapolis Colts and the Houston Texans, and he chose to come to the Texans on a cheaper contract. It's also been well documented and reported that the Indianapolis Colts had a trade in place with the Kansas City Chiefs for L'Jarius Sneed.
Does seem like that one maybe didn't have as much teeth to it, but now it was reported.
Yes, it was reported that, you know, that they had a deal in place, or they were close to a deal, but then the Tennessee Titans swooped in and took him instead.
Gotcha.
So they tried to make some big moves. They just came up short in both of them. But they still had a good offseason, I would say, because Michael Pittman and DeForest Buckner are very good players.
Young core gets a year older. Chris Ballard is notoriously patient as a general manager, which is really interesting because when it comes to the quarterback situation, they have had so many quarterbacks. And after a while, you would think that in trying to replace Andrew Luck, you would get sick of going from one veteran to the next to the next to the next. Anthony Richardson obviously is the change, the turn for the Colts. And we don't know much about him. He had two touchdown drives against the Texans. And then after that, he didn't play much, if at all, the rest of the year. I think that might have been it for Anthony Richardson. That game, suffered a concussion, shoulder injury that aggravated itself. We don't know if Richardson's going to be good or not, but I think just going forward, comparing these two teams and the way that they approached this offseason is something that we're going to do. Because you cannot forget that the Colts, one, pants the Texans week two. Shane Steichen embarrassed D'Amico Ryans. That offensive approach that the Colts had, not just with Anthony Richardson, a rookie, the first two drives, but what they had with Gardner Minshew when he came in, was something that the Texans never found an answer for. Early in the year, young team, new head coach, but same thing for the Indianapolis Colts, who were down to their backup quarterback, who was less talented, as we saw in the regular season finale, than C.J. Stroud, significantly. Less talented than most quarterbacks, I would say, with how inaccurate he was. And yet, the Colts almost won that last game Saturday night, and I wonder why Jonathan Taylor was off the field for that 4th-and-1 where they threw it to the running back who drops the ball. Right, I mean, it's not even like it was Zach Moss. It was somebody else entirely. Yeah. I forget his name that was out there and drops a 4th-and-1 pass. Colts get that. Who knows what happens? Who knows if they end up driving down the field, scoring a touchdown, winning the game? But these two teams are a lot closer than I think a lot of Houston Texans fans wearing the battle red, deep steel blue glasses would like to admit, and the Texans went super aggressive. The Colts did not. I think if the Colts had a quarterback, and we don't know that Anthony Richardson is or isn't a quarterback yet, I think the Colts' approach is generally the correct one to have.
I would say it is, but my biggest counter to that is that they are at a different place in their timeline.
How are they at a different place?
Because they've been trying to win and have success and bring in talent for years now. They just came up short. So, like, they brought in Matt Ryan. They brought in Phillip Rivers. They tried to win and add DeForest Buckner, and they drafted Michael
Pittman. They just resigned, and they signed him, too.
But they flopped it out. You know, it flopped, right? They had to fire their coach, and they ended up in position to draft Anthony Richardson. So, I think the core of their roster is in a different place than their quarterback.
I disagree. I think they're in the exact same spot right now, the Texans and the Colts.
Because the reason why, to me, they're different is that the Texans don't have anyone that they're ready to resign yet. Like, that's where... I think that's why the approach is different. Because eventually, you're not going to see the Texans go out and sign free agents. Because they're going to have to pay Nico, Will Anderson, CJ, and Derek Stingley.
Well, they just let Jonathan Greenard go. I mean, they did let some of their guys walk this offseason. So, it's not like they brought everybody back. They are just sticking true to the two-year contract side of things. But on top of that, being super aggressive to get Danielle Hunter, to get to Nico Autry, to get Azeez Al-Shaair. The Colts, meanwhile, are running it back. Like, most of the moves that the Colts made this offseason were re-signings. You're right. They tried to make a couple of moves, but generally, I think that the teams that are patient and pragmatic in free agency are better off. They just have to get that quarterback. And we will see with Richardson, but I feel pretty good about the Colts with Richardson because of how good Shane Steichen was in year one as a coach.
Yeah, Anthony Richardson, he's tough because you go back to college. Obviously, you know, being a Gators fan, like, it's a roller coaster with Anthony Richardson. He goes from looking like he's going to win the Heisman one week to being absolutely a disaster the next week. Really, the biggest problem is he played in five games last year. He finished one of them. If he can't stay healthy, then he has to change his style so dramatically. And that's where I lose any faith that he would be a good quarterback in the NFL. Because I like pieces of his game, but he's electric running the ball. Like that, there's no denying. You put him in open space, it's probably him and Justin Fields are probably the two most athletic quarterbacks in the NFL. I would imagine he's going to be a better quarterback than Justin Fields, though. And with Shane Steichen as his offensive coordinator, it does, you know, tend to be a very good thing for the Colts. I think it was Lamont who brought this up when I was on the Bees, that Shane Steichen has pretty consistently worked D'Amico Ryans in his career. Like, if you looked at, you know, the Eagles and the 49ers when they would match up week two this season, he's had very good success. This is the rivalry or the two teams that I'm most focused in on. I don't put Jacksonville in this category.
No, I don't either.
Like, I would be way more, if you told me the Texans do not win the division this year, I am picking the Indianapolis Colts to be that team to win the division, not the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah, I'm not either. I don't take Trevor Lawrence seriously. I don't know what to make of Anthony Richardson yet, though. I think Richardson's athleticism is something that should be definitely scary, but I also think the effortless way with which he can throw a football is something that's pretty interesting if he figures things out. There were a couple of moments, because I watched before the second game of the year, I remember watching Anthony Richardson's first game and really comparing him to Bryce Young and comparing CJ Stroud to the two as well. And I thought Richardson did a lot of things in the wake of pretty difficult pressure that has to make you feel pretty good just about his ability to deliver the ball when he's under pressure. There are a couple of times where, I mean, you see him doing the things that he's doing with a guy actually on him, stepping through a defender, hitting him, and throwing a beautiful pass downfield. And Stroud is capable of doing that, but he's not going to stand tall in there. He's kind of going to let the momentum kind of carry him.
Mm-hmm.
Bryce Young can't do that at all. And I think this is going to be something with Richardson. He's going to be, I think, one of the more difficult quarterbacks to sack in the league. So if he can be a good passer, like, watch out for some Josh Allen kind of terrifying games.
Yeah, if Steichen can follow the trajectory with Anthony Richardson that he did with Jalen Hurts, probably in year three is when you really see that jump, because, you know, last year almost doesn't count for Richardson being hurt for 80% of the season. So it is going to be fascinating just to watch his development, because so many of these running quarterbacks struggle with staying healthy. And if he can just do that with the quarterback...
Off to a bad start. I think they didn't even have him finish the week one game
I think it was one game he finished of the five that he played in, or one of the four. He played all four quarters. But yeah, he got hurt versus the Vikings in week one. And it's just like, ugh, that's...
And it's flukish.
Tough.
At this point, over time, it could be more than that.
Yeah.
Having Joe Flacco as the backup over Gardner Minshew, is that an upgrade? Based off of the way Flacco played last year, it might be. Obviously, Flacco had some struggles against the Texans when he had the two interceptions back-to-back, but it felt like the game just died for Cleveland at that moment in time.
Yeah.
I think that Flacco can make more throws than Gardner Minshew can. I mean, Minshew was just missing passes against the Texans. And that game, I know we all look at it and say, yeah, the Texans won. It was great. That game was so close, and they probably should have lost it.
Yeah, I mean, your two biggest wins of the year last year are against backup quarterbacks. If you're going to have doubt on the Houston
and
Texans.
Burrow.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah, I was thinking more just towards the end of the season when the games like really, really mattered.
That's
but
right.
Yes, you did. But you beat Joe Burrow when healthy.
Your playoff kind of games. That makes sense.
But then you have, you know, you play the Colts with Gardner Minshew, and you barely beat them. You work the Cleveland Browns, but Joe Flacco was abysmal in the second half. The first half, he was moving the ball up and down the field at the beginning of the game like it was nobody's business. And then you got smoked by the Baltimore Ravens. Like, if you're going to look at the Houston Texans view 2023 season in a negative light, that to me is what you look at, is that in their biggest games, yes, they beat Cincinnati, but what was Joe Burrow before that? He was hurt and awful. Like, he had really just started to turn around his season in that moment. And then when you had other success later in the season when it mattered most, you beat backup quarterbacks. Like, it is, it's the it's not a red flag about the Texans past season, but it's your biggest question of if it was last year was a fluke, you know, that might be why. And this year, to what we've talked about, you play a much more challenging schedule in terms of the quarterbacks that you play. Would you expect both these teams to be playoff teams next year? The AFC is still really deep, but
one of these teams is winning the AFC South.
Yep.
That's all I got. Both teams making it. I think if you look at the AFC East, it does feel like the Bills and Dolphins are taking steps back. Kansas City is where they are already. Are the Chargers taking a step ahead with Jim Harbaugh? They don't have a lot of talent on that roster. I don't take the Raiders seriously. Broncos, nah. Same thing. Quarterback situation there. So maybe because the AFC East and the AFC West as a whole aren't great, gives you a chance. Problem is, the whole AFC North is capable of finishing the year over 500. And if I'm not mistaken, they did this past season.
They did, yeah. The Bengals finished in last place. So they have a last place schedule, finishing 9-8 last year. We know they're going to be better. Who knows with Cleveland? Their Deshaun Watson led is... That to me is the most complicated team in the NFL this year, is the Cleveland Browns. The talent, what they did with Joe Flacco, it all screams like Super Bowl contender because Deshaun Watson's their quarterback. But Deshaun Watson's their quarterback, and I don't know who Deshaun Watson is.
I don't either.
I think I might be more confident of who Anthony Richardson is than Deshaun Watson. Mm-hmm. Like, and then what is the Russell Wilson, Justin Fields experiment like in Pittsburgh? That's
probably
another one that I'm so curious
about. I think that the Steelers are going to finally have a sub 500 year. But I feel like we've been saying that for years. Somehow they don't do it every single team.
It's
time.
Stunning. Like that they, and it's almost bad for them as a franchise because they can't reset at the quarterback position because they're always just right in the middle, that they have to now go after guys like Russell Wilson and Justin Fields to address their quarterback needs. But this is going to be the most competitive part of this division, I think, going forward. And when the two times the Houston Texans and the Indianapolis Colts play, and I'm going to take a shot in the dark and say one of those will be a primetime game this year, it is going to be important.
What kind of primetime? Do you think it'll be a Saturday primetime game?
No, that one screams Thursday Night Football.
Yeah, that's a good call. We've seen
Thursday Night Football.
Yeah.
We've seen a couple of Thursday night Texans-Colts games.
Yeah. But like Anthony Richardson, CJ Stroud.
If Richardson's healthy, it'll
good
actually,
headline.
I think, be a more exciting game too. Because that Saturday game at the end of the year, it was sort of like these teams are cute, aren't they?
Yeah.
Look at the AFC South. Bless their hearts.
A little bit of pat on the head. They're playing for a playoff spot. Look at them. I would like, though, I wish I had kept a running tally of how many times during the, like, what, month, almost 2 months of the show, how many different Texans games we said, oh yeah, that might be a primetime game.
Yeah, I think we're
probably up to like 10 different games have been like, that could be a primetime game.
I mean, honestly, almost every game they play could be. There's going to be an argument, because even when you play the bad teams, it's still in theory, as of next Friday, could be CJ Stroud versus Jaden Daniels. Like, it could be C.J. Stroud versus Drake May when you play the Vikings.
I'm going to go ahead and say the Commanders-Texans probably going to be a noon on Fox.
I mean, they're going to play – are they going to play the top four – they're going to play four rookie quarterbacks next year now, I think it is, because they're going to play the Bears. They're going to play the Commanders, I believe. No, I don't think they play the Commanders. They play the Bears, the Patriots, and the Vikings. And all three of those teams could have a new
Patriots might trade back. So
that's true. They could.
We'll see.
I can't wait to see.
They might trade with the Vikings, actually.
I can't tell if Paul's going to be upset if the Patriots don't.
He's not going to be upset about it.
I won't care. I won't care until I see them on the field.
You know,
hope they get a quarterback, but I'm beyond.
But you don't get like the new QB jitters? I know you've never had those before.
I've never had them before. I've never had. I mean, Mac Jones, when they drafted him,
yeah,
I was so underwhelmed. And I was like, this guy is in worse shape than me, and I'm 34. Or wait, how old was I then? 32, 31. Shut up. It wasn't that long ago.
It was in 2021.
Oh, I thought you said when you were 21.
No.
I was like, damn, it wasn't that long ago.
Hey, Mac Jones, that's Trevor Lawrence's backup, okay? Put some respect.
Hey, Jacksonville kid coming home.
Yeah.
He's like their Case Keenum.
Yeah. Storyline of the offseason. Remember when Tim Tebow and Trevor Lawrence were teammates? That was fun. That happened for an offseason. Rafael Stone and Eli Wolf, the assistant GM of the Houston Rockets, have been extended. What is your reaction? 713-780-3776. That's next on Glanton George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
After 8 years, Forrest Whitley has been called up to the bigs. I just saw someone tweet this. It was a program from a game in Round Rock, and it said, "The future." And it was a photo of Kyle Tucker, Yordan Alvarez, and Forrest Whitley in Round Rock Express jerseys. So I have no idea what year that was from.
Two-thirds true.
Yeah. You know, 2 for 3 isn't bad.
No.
Maybe 3 for 3. We'll see how it goes.
And then the CEO of the Blue Crow Sports Group and the president of a couple soccer teams, Jeff Luhnow, just tweeted a long, winding road, but yes, go Forrest, go. So Jeff Luhnow's excited that Forrest Whitley's coming up. Can he just come back?
I was trying to get Dell excited for Forrest Whitley not even coming back, just or coming up to the majors. But I said, well, Jeff Luhnow has a pretty good track record of drafting you guys, so, you know. This is maybe the last Jeff Luhnow draft pick to make his major league debut for the Astros.
Pour one out.
I bet you it's got to be.
It's almost impossible for it not to
be. I'm like, who else would there be? Like when he got fired, his last draft was in 2019?
Yeah.
You know, you said something a moment ago that makes me wonder.
Bring back Jeff?
Jeff Luhnow. Is it possible? Is it even possible this year things have not gone so well? Is it Dana Brown's fault? Not necessarily. They got Jose Altuve locked up for life. You like that. The Josh Hader move feels like more of a Jim Crane move. Would Jeff Luhnow have said no to that? You wonder, would he have gone after some of the guys that they just let walk? Would they still be essentially raiding the Caribbean by offering the whatever $10,000 contract that Ronel Blanco got because the Astros scout happened to be at a Julio Rodriguez workout? Is it so impossible for Jeff Luhnow to come back? Is there something in the way of that? What is it?
I don't know. But he's the only person connected to the sign-stealing scandal that is not involved in baseball.
Is he blackballed?
He has to be. Now, part of this is because we've all been there, right? We've all met people in our life who are just like, everyone hates this person. And you don't, if they ruin their opportunity at something, you're not going to help them again. And I think that's what this is with Jeff Luhnow, is that he was so disliked amongst general managers, scouts, within the organization, outside of the organization, other teams. Honestly, sometimes we're just bending them over the barrel in trades that like, embarrassing them. Like, think back to the Bryce Harper trade that almost happened. Not a single player, once Chandler Rome reported on who was supposedly going to the Nationals, was a good prospect. Who did the Astros trade for, like, Garrett Cole and Greinke that really hurt you? Nobody. So I think people just didn't like Jeff Luhnow. Clearly, no one from the Cardinals liked Jeff Luhnow. So between that and sign-stealing scandal, yes, I think he's just blackballed.
You had the Evan Drellick book, Winning Fixes Everything, How Baseball's Brightest Minds Created Sport's Biggest Mess. There's a lot of baseball media types that looked even more angrily at what the Houston Astros had done when they found out that, oh, they're not just cheating. They treat the people that work here not so well, and continued with what happened or didn't happen with James Click. They offered him a one-year extension after they win the World Series, and a lot of people were like, that's reprehensible that they would do that. You also, I think, have with the PBS documentary that came out, the same guy who wrote about the Astros in that Sports Illustrated article. Mm-hmm. What was it on? Was it on Apple TV? Said a lot of things that we knew already, but again, it didn't paint him in the most favorable light. He's the one guy that hasn't come back in, though. And, I mean, Carlos Beltran is associated with the Yankees organization, even if he isn't a player or a manager. He's part of the broadcast team. Alex Cora's back, and it seems like Alex Cora might not exactly be the easiest person to work with based off of some of the stories that we saw in that Evan Drellick book. And I'm sure there's some stories in Boston that are going on right now where people would say the exact same thing. It is very strange that Luhnow, a guy who clearly was doing a lot right, a guy who's bilingual, you know, he's from Mexico City originally, especially for all those teams that maybe want to copy, not the Astros necessarily stealing signs, but going into the Caribbean and finding all of these players. It is very strange.
So strange.
That not one team has tried to give some sort of godfather offer to him.
Even the fact that the Astros fired Jeff Luhnow and AJ Hinch, and then they operated their front office with James Click, with a bunch of people that worked for Jeff Luhnow. Like, part of it is definitely that people don't believe Jeff. Like, I really like Vanessa. I did not enjoy the interview that she did with Jeff, to be honest. I thought it was too puff PC, and I just didn't think that he was honest with her. I don't believe that someone that is like this methodical about everything he did within the Houston Astros organization could have just zero idea that this team was cheating in the way they were. And I think most people are like me. They don't believe Jeff, that he is honestly
he's smart enough where you're like, really, man?
Yeah, it's also like the operation wasn't exactly like the most efficient or the most like well thought out. It was literally stick a camera in center field, point it at the catcher,
bang a trash can,
have a video feed in the dugout tunnel, and have a trash can.
The devil's advocate argument, I guess, for Luhnow perhaps being blissfully unaware of something would be that the Cardinals had access to all of his scouting logs because he didn't change his password. So perhaps sometimes things, even for the smartest people out there, slip through the cracks.
But he never like walked down the dugout and was like, "Oh, where are all these cameras for? Where are all these video screen and this notebook decoding signs?"
Yeah, it's hard. And like, I get it. Like Junior Bronco, like I get it. I don't know if you want to be a troll or whatever. You think because I'm a Cubs fan that I believe that Jeff Luhnow was blissfully unaware. If you want to live in a world in which you think that every single member of the Astros organization was aware of what's going on.
What if they're a Cardinal, Joe?
And that AJ Hinch was ripping off televisions and removing trash cans to try to stop this, and that Jeff Luhnow was unaware. I'm sorry, you're just an absolute idiot. Like, I can't help you. Like, you can be a troll all you want, but like, you can just be a moron and just like, that's fine. But I would love for Jeff Luhnow to actually be honest, but there's a reason why no one's hired him. And I would love the idea of the Astros.
He's a Cardinal.
Like, I would love the idea of Jeff Luhnow coming back.
Oh, they need a new TV? Why? Oh, AJ Hinch destroyed it? Why? I don't know.
I don't know when the MLB sent memos to Jeff Luhnow and the Astros saying, hey, look at these photos of George Springer. We don't like whatever is happening during this at-bat and during these Josh Reddick and Marwin Gonzalez at-bats. And then he didn't pass along the info to stop sign-stealing to his team and to his players. It kind of means he's guilty. Like, I would love Jeff Luhnow to come back, though. He should be back. It's stupid that he's not back.
I can't believe that not one of the 30 teams in baseball has tried to bring him back. And maybe he's done with it. Maybe he likes the challenge of being overseas in another country and working with soccer teams there. he is probably someone that believes that he can make whatever his statistical analysis system work legitimately in anything, and it must be like the most epic of flexes to have. Like, yeah, I actually can make this happen anywhere, so on to the next.
Yeah, because I mean, if you take that line of thinking, like, yeah, I kind of figured out baseball. Like,
it is baseball.
I figured out Major League Baseball. Let me try to figure out soccer now. Like, it is like
more popular sport.
What he built is still like, it's the bones of it is still what happened last year is the making the ALCS.
And that's why there has to be
with
a
5 years of like he hasn't been the GM for 5 years.
Yeah, that's why he has to be blackballed, because there's no way an organization like an entire sport looks at the Astros' success and says we don't care when the Red Sox didn't care about Cora, the Tigers don't care about Hinch, the Yankees didn't care about. And the Mets didn't care about bringing in Beltran at first. And then they brought him back. Like, the Yankees are using our like Astros guys in the TV booth. There's just no logical way in which everyone got a chance except for Luno without saying he got blackballed.
It's nuts. It's just one guy. It's crazy. And obviously the players, they caught up very easy. Very, very, very easy. You know? Oh, no, people might boo us the first year.
Like,
there's
a
pandemic. Very convenient time for a pandemic.
Hmm.
No, Jeff didn't start the pandemic.
Convenient timing.
Jeff did not start the pandemic as a distraction.
Rob Manfred did, is what you're saying.
So the Mike Fiers thing came out in like November of 2019.
Yeah.
The first cases in Wuhan.
Wild spitballing going on right now.
I mean, he was a rat.
You know what? Let me ask Aaron Rodgers what he thinks about this.
Oh, dude. Is there a reason why you're saying that, Sean?
Yeah, because, you know, he's a fellow conspiracy theorist.
Because he's going on podcasts and telling people that the government made HIV in the 80s right now?
Is that what he's saying today?
That's what Aaron Rodgers is saying.
Hell yeah.
Today.
Was he on McAfee or is that on just the internet?
Whatever podcast he's on. It was not on
McAfee. I want that to be on McAfee.
I would love to know the line of questioning that took from Pat McAfee or one of his producers asking Aaron Rodgers a question that led to that.
Yeah, it is just Aaron Rodgers is whatever he's taken. Good for him is what I'll say.
Could you have Aaron Rodgers in studio with us?
Yeah, I don't have like that much disdain for. I think he's a great quarterback.
A quarterback who murdered your team on a regular basis and says outlandish things.
Yeah, but I kind of liked Aaron versus like Favre.
Oh, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, I don't know why. He was so good. It's one of those where it's like it is. Maybe he beat me down, man. He beat me.
That's what it was.
He beat me into respect.
Favre was when you still had hope.
Yeah. Rodgers just beat me into respect.
You thought you could beat Favre. Yeah. And then you didn't think you could beat Rodgers.
Fact.
How uncomfortable would you be with the rabbit holes that Rodgers and I might go down as you try
to
stick to sports?
I would just listen. I would just listen.
I feel like I would be very intrigued to see how deep down a rabbit hole I could go with that guy just having a conversation. Not knowing how much of it I would believe, but more so just wondering how far could his AD take my ADD?
Yeah, it's just like what?
The curiosity. Where is it taking us?
It was 1 + 1 equals like 100 with him. Because you would just keep going and going and going. There would be no breaks that day.
I hope he would just bring mushrooms or something.
I don't know if he does mushrooms. I think it's just ayahuasca.
Well, ayahuasca is going to make you puke and poo all over the place.
Then I'm out on that.
Yeah, yeah. You can't do ayahuasca. We couldn't do ayahuasca here at a radio station.
You actually have to do a retreat for that. This isn't just like, oh, you can just, you know, puff a little reefer. No, no.
I mean, they pepper spray Jong.
No, there's a whole...
That's true. That's true. We played that.
Like, why couldn't we do this?
There's a whole, like, ritual or something. With
why can't we have Paul do ayahuasca during a show?
Don't you need a shaman? All Fred and AJ needed was a finger like, and some pepper spray.
Like, we can't get a shaman to come?
I don't know. I don't know if we can get a shaman. I'll ask around.
All right. Sounds good. All right. 10-minute drill. What's going on in the NFL? That's next year on Glott and George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Yeah, we might not be having ayahuasca, but I bet Aaron Rodgers and anybody out there would love if I just, as he sat down for theoretical interview, I just grab a big old bottle of Pendleton whiskey and slam it on the table. True Western tradition. I'd help him unlock his inner cowboy. We'd have some deep conversations because that Pendleton whiskey is just a refreshing thing to drink while you're having deep conversations with somebody that is equally as deep as you. Pendleton whiskey is awesome because, one, it's barrel-aged in American oak. Two, it is cut with glacier water from Mount Hood. And three, made with the finest northern grains. You blend it all together. You know what I do. I put one big old rock in the glass, two fingers worth of it. It's really, really good. It's not too sweet, just the way that I like my whiskey. On top of that, it's actually, I think, very good to put in with coffee. You can make your own espresso Pendleton martini, if you so choose. You can make all sorts of awesome drinks with Pendleton whiskey. You can check out their website to see all sorts of cocktails you can put together. But you can also get Pendleton whiskey at your local liquor store or order it on Drizzly. It's Pendleton whiskey. Satisfy your inner cowboy. It's true Western tradition.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Dad, hush!
Tackling the biggest news in the NFL.
This just in.
With Paul Gallant and Joe George. The 10-minute drill starts now.
Football time. 10-minute drill on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I'm going to take a guess. We're going to go right to OJ just because he's the gift that keeps on giving, even though he's no longer with us. Not RIP. His executor as backtracking. Originally, the executor of his estate said that they would give the Goldman family no money.
Of the $33 million that they owe.
Of course, they've walked that back now.
I wonder what made him walk that back.
Because you probably legally have to give it to him.
There's that. But also, I imagine that he felt severe backlash. There are still some people who believe somebody else killed Nicole Brown and Ron Goldman. But you got to have some very, very, very conclusive evidence if you think that something is going to overturn a civil verdict to award a murdered man's family $33 million. And with interest, that supposedly is closer to $100 million right now. And it also seems like OJ has gone out of his way to not pay them in a variety of different ways. You can look that up for yourself online. So, that guy sucks. It is fun to see internet justice, internet mobs, which sometimes are over the top.
Yeah, a little bit.
Change somebody's mind.
Yeah.
The way with which he said it was dickish as well. This is one of those things where keep it to yourself if you're going to try to stop giving that money out, you know?
Yeah.
This is something that you didn't need to say publicly unless you're trying to make a name for yourself, like a lot of these braying jackals who are lawyers these days.
Yeah, it definitely feels like a name of like, hey, like I can handle these big cases and I will do my best to make sure that your side wins, even though he had to backtrack it right away. But yeah, just a dumb thing to say. And he had to walk it back. Justin Jefferson officially not the first day of Vikings voluntary work. Pro Football Talk suggests that they either just pay him or trade him.
Hmm. I had an idea today. Would you rather have traded significantly more to get Justin Jefferson than extend him to a contract than trade for Stephon Diggs? And I know a lot of Houston Texans fans out there, you would say, hell yes, because Justin Jefferson is arguably the best wide receiver in the NFL right now. I'm curious what the asking price would be, though. I would think it would be 2 first-round picks.
At least, right?
Probably a little more on top of it as well. And that extension, you're going to have to make him the highest paid wide receiver in the NFL. I think the Texans actually would have had the cap space to make that happen.
But maybe very little else.
Correct. Would the trade that you've already made with the Vikings have helped you out in any way? Could that have been part of the deal? That's something I'm curious about. He does seem to be available at this moment in time. I can see why he wouldn't immediately report to voluntary workouts where they don't even have a quarterback on the roster.
Yeah.
And this might be something that once it's minicamp, he might come. But he's the best receiver in the NFL, and he actually has leverage, more leverage than he had already in a situation where there's no quarterback. Guys like Justin Jefferson are hard to find, and the Vikings have been exceptionally lucky the last half decade, the last decade, mm-hmm. drafting one, Stephon Diggs in the 5th round, and then 2, Justin Jefferson.
I mean, look at their franchise track record. You went from what?
Randy Moss, Chris Carter. Yeah, they've had great ones.
And then you go Moss to Diggs to Jefferson? It's crazy. Like what they've done. It's just, and honestly, you know what? If I was the Vikings, I'd trade him. I would trade him. If you're not going to pay him, I would trade him, and this is the year to do it. Like, you've got Malik Nabers from LSU at the top of the draft, Marvin Harrison Jr. Like, you've got top talent.
Man, you said Nabers before you said Marvin Harrison Jr.?
A lot of people believe that.
Do you believe that?
I don't know.
Okay. I'm curious. I was like, the only receiver I know by heart in this year's draft.
Yeah.
Because I really don't study until, like, the week before. The only one I know is Marvin Harrison Jr., and I'm told that he is God.
And then you have, you know, Roma Dunze, too. Like, you have three wide receivers who are running the top 10. So, if you were going to do it, this is probably the year to do it.
Man, they also
don't know how the Chargers pull it off, but if you're adamant about not keeping Justin Jefferson or not paying him to the contract he's worth, how do you not call the Chargers and say, hey, we'll give you, like, we'll do Justin Jefferson for the fifth overall pick in the draft, and then the Vikings can just go back to having a cheap wide receiver that they're eventually not going to pay? Like, it's better than just franchising and eventually letting him walk.
I like that we just have the Vikings as the Tampa Bay Rays when it comes to wide receivers.
Well, they had a lot. They had Adam Thielen.
Sidney Rice, yeah.
Oh, Sidney Rice. What a bull, Sean.
Jake Reed was a good player back in the day.
Yeah.
I'll take your word for it.
I don't remember Jake Reed.
Might be before our time.
Yeah, some NFC Central fan you are.
I don't even remember. Honestly, like, I forgot that they used to have the Central. Like, I know it wasn't that long.
Because it changed in 2002.
Yeah, so I guess that's really, because that's really when I started, like, getting back into the NFL. What's the first Super Bowl you remember?
30.
Which was?
The Cowboys beat the Steelers. Larry Brown, okay. MVP. I didn't get to watch the whole game. I only got to watch the first quarter.
The first Super Bowl that I really remember was Rams-Titans. Like, vividly remember.
I remember that.
Patriots-Panthers. The one in Houston.
Yeah, I mean, sorry we're not old, Paul.
I mean,
I don't remember the first page.
35 going on 40.
Yeah, that is legitimately it. I had a couple of dark moments Friday night after a few drinks. I'm like, damn, I am close to 40 now. I did not think 35 would. 35 did not hit me when I turned 35. But
that Friday night when you were
drinking
a little bit. A
couple of drinks later, I was like, damn, I'm 35.
Like, I'm
rounding up to 40.
Like, I'm single. My sister's about to have kid number two. Doctor.
Congratulations.
Very successful.
Hey, just remember, the dating pool is going to reopen for you soon, okay?
No, I mean, it should be open now.
Like, it's the transfer portal? Like,
yeah.
Like, you're going to get the spring portal opening up.
The divorces are on the way. It'll reopen for you a little bit soon. You know?
The game will come back
to you. You'll be option number two in the long run, but maybe you'll provide more happiness.
I hope so.
A lot of women out there married their Drew Bledsoe. Maybe you can be their Tom Brady.
Do you know what's bad? I've had a couple of people seriously ask me this question. And look, I share. You know I overshare. A couple of people over, like, the last couple of days have been like, are you happy, Paul? And I'm like, what does that mean? What am I giving off that's what you're asking me right now? Oh, you just don't seem happy. What? Wait, first off, you know me, so... Okay.
You know the answer is no.
Like, generally, I'm irritated by something. But damn. Are you okay?
Now, like, were they texting you or were they with you?
Both.
Okay. Now, see, the person that's with you, like...
The person that was with me, I was like, are you serious, dude? Let me have some drinks.
Like, but at least, like, they're, like, looking at you. Like, they're looking at you and they can be like, you know what, Paul? You just don't look great. The person who's texting you, just, like, randomly being like, hey, dude, are you okay?
I was like, whoa.
Like, dude, like, whoa.
Where did that come from?
Like, what did I do on my Twitter account that, like, made you feel like I need to be checked in on?
Yeah, I didn't have, like, an away message up that said, like, nothing matters. God.
Micah Parsons and CeeDee Lamb both also skipped first day of camp. I think both those guys will end up being there. But if there was one to be traded, it would probably be CeeDee Lamb, I would imagine.
Yeah. Micah Parsons. But at the same time, if they trade CeeDee Lamb, who's their number one guy?
That's true.
I mean, they
draft with the first round pick that they get for CeeDee Lamb.
I guess, but I mean, they're in such a tricky spot, and all these guys want to get paid now, and the team hasn't done anything, and as soon as they pay one of these three guys, it's going to hurt their ability to do anything more. They're in a strange spot. They're still good. They're probably going to make the playoffs next year. They're probably going to win the NFC East, but... I do not know what to make of them. And all these players, again, it's just voluntary workouts. Not that big of a deal, but they're not showing up because they all want to get paid.
No, and like, it just speaks to, the Cowboys are, I don't want to go, like, they're just totally screwed. Because really, the issue is that, like, they have too many good players that all want to get paid. That's not like a giant issue, but there is a little bit of like. It just speaks to they just could have gotten these deals done earlier. Like, why did they wait so long to get these deals done? And now they all are stacking up, and you're at a spot where you're waiting for the Justin Jefferson deal. Like, you need to get the CeeDee Lamb deal done before Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase signed. Like,
yeah.
Sign some of these guys, please.
Yeah, I mean, that's. I hope the Texans are never in the exact position the Cowboys are in, because I hope they pay their guys in a more reasonable time frame.
I trust Nick Caserio to navigate this more than Stephen Jones.
I honestly hope that they are not one of those teams that constantly feels the need to pay their guys. I mean,
yeah, let certain guys walk.
Yes,
but they're going to have to pay. Like, you're going to have to pay some of these guys.
Some of them,
and so it is. It's the you just can't have the apocalypse that the Colts or that the Cowboys are having, where it's like, okay, so you're going to have to sign more than likely Stroud and Anderson to their deals the same summer. I guess maybe you could get one of them done early and then the other one done later, but really you should just they're both so good after their rookie year that you'd think that there are no doubt about an extension guy.
Yeah, you don't want to be in a position to where you've given the fifth-year contract the fifth-year on Derek Stingley Jr., and you're staring down a barrel of it's time to extend Anderson, Stroud, and Stingley Jr. All at the same time.
And Tank's going to be around the same time. Exactly. You have to make a decision on that.
Like, it's like they're going to have a lot of options at one time.
You're probably going to have Collins on a deal at that point.
They're going to let a few of those players walk or trade them. Get ready for it.
They will.
Yeah, no, but it's just like, just don't do what the Colts or don't do what the Cowboys are doing.
Yeah, just trying to be a little bit less disorganized than the Cowboys.
I think they will be less disorganized than the Cowboys. I get it. Ugh, Patriots. But, I mean, Nick Caserio was there for a while. They got the quarterback. Now it's literally a matter of just make sure that you don't lock yourself into Josh Hader, Rafael Montero contracts.
And that's why the biggest difference is that I don't think we'll ever be at a point with the Texans where the Cowboys are. Where the Cowboys are going to have to give Dak Prescott $60 million, and it's a terrible idea.
Yeah. But they feel like they have to.
But they feel like they have to.
Because that is really kind of the root of all of it, is that you have a quarterback that you feel like, we don't want to have no quarterback, but we don't love this guy and letting his number one receiver walk. And, he has to have a situation around him to be worth $60 million, but paying him $60 million makes it harder to have that situation around him.
Yeah. All right. Yesterday, Will Anderson, D'Amico Ryans, CJ Stroud met with the media. CJ Stroud said he was a-sleeping when Stephon Diggs was traded to the Houston Texans. So what is the most important thing you slept through in your life? 713-780-3776. That's next on Glanton George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN. 97.5. This is Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to Paul and Joe inside the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
CJ Stroud met with the media yesterday. He was asked about his initial reaction when he heard about the Stephon Diggs trade. And he said he was sleeping when it happened. So, what's the most important thing you slept through, Paul?
The Wheelhouse, RIP, would argue they were the most important thing that I ever slept through. They had booked me for an afternoon interview, and I took a nap, and I just didn't wake up. They were very mad at me afterwards.
Oh, darn.
Yeah, I didn't really want to do it, but I felt obligated to do it. I do like those three guys.
I do too.
I felt they were a little more mad than they should be. Like, do you really need to have the great Paul Gallant on your show?
I mean, you're the great Paul Gallant.
Do you really want the great Paul Gallant show on your show in afternoons?
I mean, clearly they had three people, but they needed a fourth that day. I mean,
On a lighter note, I'm trying to think. Well, I think if I change the subject, it makes it feel like there's beef out there. So we're just creating a little media beef.
I'm not the one that's like tweeting in our mentions about how the Astros haven't beaten the Yankees since the Wheelhouse got canceled, in quotes, because two of them quit. I'm just saying.
We're spilling the tea. We're spilling the tea. Serious things that I've slept through, though. You know, there was a time when I was over at the Texans flagship, and I have a really tough time getting out of bed in the morning. Always have. I'm just not a morning person. Mm-hmm. I press the snooze button a lot. This has been going on for almost 20 years now, going back to college. I need help waking up.
Okay.
I set all sorts of alarms. Somehow I'll sleepwalk. I'll turn off. I'll press the snooze button, whatever. But when I first started over at the Texans flagship and was basically on call, they found a way to give me more work by having me run the board at this basically nationally syndicated radio station that just played shows from other places. Mm-hmm. I literally just had to show up on time and press the buttons. But I kept on waking up late for whatever reason. I started drinking coffee after this. But rightfully so, the person who was supposed to train me to run it, because I kept on getting there at 6:02, the person was mad. And I was basically on the blacklist over at the Texans flagship for a good year after 2 days in a row where I showed up at 6:02 to train to start the network. And yeah, I was on that. That had me on the bleep track for basically like a year plus.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was awful. It was hard to get out of the doghouse. I was doing like Saturday and Sunday shows, 7 p.m. to 11 p.m.
That's tough.
Yeah.
That's tough. From the 409, my buddies and I played an annual golf tournament on Christmas Eve, then throwing money to sponsor a family for Christmas. That's very nice. 1 year I got so drunk I passed out and missed Christmas Eve service where I was supposed to meet my girlfriend's parents. That's tough.
I wonder if that relationship survived.
Yeah, let us know.
Did you lie your way out of it?
Yeah. Can we get a follow-up on that?
I was taking a nap, like CJ Stroud.
Are you guys married now? Like,
I hope so.
I think it's either they, for the story to have a satisfying ending, either that they're married or they like broke up the next day. Mm. Anything in between where it's like, yeah, actually, broke up for completely unrelated reasons. I'm like, okay.
And then this one from the 346, I once slept through a time when I was supposed to meet up with this chick I was seeing so I could meet her friends. And if that happens, if that's the worst thing that ever happened, I missed a final.
Oh, boy.
And it was 40% of my grade.
Oh, no. Did you have to take the class over?
Well, I ended up transferring. So you
from the grind.
I just took the F.
You pulled a Will Levis.
Yeah. I was like,
Tom Savage. Remember that? Tom Savage used to transfer a lot.
It's true.
Before he became a Texan.
Ryan Mallett overslept and transferred in college.
Yeah.
That's
true. Were you at the flagship when that happened with Mallett?
With Mallett? Oh, yeah. I thought it was hilarious.
Did you guys get
They
like,
did not.
Was that one of those moments where you guys got a be nice email?
No.
I was curious. Like,
here's the thing. I never got it. Everyone talks about it, and I joke about it all the time. Like, I got the program director pulled out some brass knuckles and a pistol on me. I hope that you know me well enough to know when I'm being sarcastic and joking around. He actually pulled out a bazooka. No, I'm kidding. I never was told what to and what not to say about the Houston Texans, ever.
Oh, yeah.
I will give the old PD, Ryan McCracken, I'll give him a lot of credit. That guy had my back on a lot because they complained about me often, but I never heard a peep about it.
I think it was more just like...
Then the new guy came in, and I heard about it a lot.
Those are my thoughts. From the 409, I slept through Myles Garrett, Mason Rudolph, helmet sack.
That sucks.
That just sucks.
That's one that you got to be up for that.
I had so much fun. This was when I was first on the air in Seattle. The next day, people were so angry because I was like, well, he might have deserved it. And then I said, it's not that bad because Antonio Smith once tried to beat Richie Incognito with his own helmet. And I was bringing that up and people were like, oh, how dare you? I was like, it happens. Guys try to beat up each other with the helmet. And that was what started me down the path of you will be fired eventually in Seattle.
Two separate texts here saying they slept through 9/11. I mean, yeah, that's a weird thing to wake up to.
It was like,
Mark Wahlberg slept through
9/11. Pretty early.
Yeah, it was like 8 o'clock those planes. Central.
Yeah.
So
I guess it like depends on.
Oh, didn't Seth MacFarlane miss the flight?
Yeah, he missed the flight. He was supposed to be.
Did he oversleep? Can we get an update on Seth?
I bet so. That seems like the most likely reason.
It was a morning flight.
Morning flight.
I think he said he drank too much and he overslept and he missed the flight. Sean, do you have anything?
No, I mean, after we finished talking about oversleeping for 9/11, do I have anything? I was taking a nap in the vein of Paul and kind of CJ Stroud. I was taking a nap and I woke up and I found out that Nick Saban had retired. Huh. Where you're just like, oh, greatest coach of all time, just retired. Cool. But yeah, no, nothing on the level of Seth MacFarlane oversleeping his flight on September 11, 2001.
I mean, how
could I?
How do we want to open? I mean, how much behind the curtains do we want to go here?
Go behind the curtains. You already have
something
like
else.
Three times this segment, Joe. You've been throwing shots.
Oh, yeah.
So, when I remember Paul and I were texting the day we found out we were going to be doing a show together. And
that's a way to put it.
And no one could get a hold of Sean. And it was like 7:30 at night, and I called Sean. And I was like, hey, man. Have you seen your last text from Paul? So Sean was sleeping when he found out that we were having a lineup change.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, when all the lineup changes happened, I was napping.
You were taking a nap through all of it. It was
probably a remote that day.
You know, opening day for the Houston Astros. I was supposed to be there for a TV show appearance with my guy Nate Griffin, and I overslept on that one too. Not good.
Yeah, that one, mornings are tough, man. I had to do mornings for about a year on the network.
Not a morning guy.
And it was a 5 a.m. shift. I hated
Oof.
It. Yeah, they started the network show at 5 a.m. because it was East Coast time. It was brutal. I despised it. I bought one of those alarm clocks that was like old school.
I have one of those,
too. With the bells. And I would put it on the opposite side of my room so I couldn't just hit it.
There is legitimately, Joe, on my phone, an app called Alarmy that I pay $60 a year for, and this thing is set up in a way where you cannot turn off the alarm, and I have still found ways around it. Like, I will somehow turn off the app so that it just buzzes instead of rings, but it just makes really annoying noises until I complete three problems. I have to do three complex double-digit addition math problems. Then I have to do 15 squats. It can tell when you're not doing squats. And then you have to walk 15 steps. I've found a way to fake the steps. It is nuts. And it just stays on the whole time. And I still find ways to stop it.
Are you sleepwalking?
I think I'm awake enough to know what I'm doing, but not care about the repercussions.
I think you can swing your arm or something for some of the steps things. You can cheat it.
All right. Yesterday on the show, Paul said that he thought maybe what the Astros was going through was just flukish. We heard Jeff Bagwell say earlier that it's just bad luck. How long can we really say this for with the Astros? That's next on Glatt and George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.